to The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back. It is a Calgary Flames game day. We're into hour two of The Big Show this afternoon. A reminder, there are so many ways to listen to us. 960 on your AM radio. You can stream us at sportsnet.ca/960. And of course, you can also tell your smart speaker to play Sportsnet 960. Our podcast also available wherever you get your podcasts: Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Subscribe now and never miss a moment. You can subscribe to all of our podcasts. That includes Boomer in the Morning and Flames Talk, Morning Edition with Ryan Pinder, and Afternoon Edition with Pat Steinberg and Matt Rose. That's coming up at 4 p.m. today. We'll get you all teed up for the Flames and the Panthers. And also tonight, it'll be a web-only broadcast at sportsnet.ca/960. As we kick off hour two of The Big Show, my name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon. And joining the program right now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline is the radio voice of the Calgary Hitmen. 6 p.m. sportsnet.ca/960. Click on the alternate stream on the right-hand side, and you will hear this gentleman's voice for the Hitmen and the Regina Pats as Calgary kicks off a three-game Saskatchewan road trip. Brad Curl joins us right now. Curly, how are you, pal?
You know, I'm better than a lot of people might think. I'm in Regina, where the wind chill is minus 35. They had closed some of the highways around the area today because of blizzard-like conditions. But you know what? I'm indoors, and I get a chance to guest with you. So, hey, it could be worse, my friend.
The sarcasm in your voice does not go undetected, Brad Curl, but hey, we're happy to have you, buddy. It's been a long time since we've chatted, and I guess just to kick things off, you might have to go all the way back to when you were a youngster and you called games on mute on your TV. I mean, what, it's January 18th, and this is your fourth broadcast of the month? Like, what's happening?
Yeah, COVID, the best friend of nobody. You know, basically, it's the situation that's happened. And for the Calgary Hitmen, the timing was kind of strange because unlike the National Hockey League, which normally plays almost right up until Christmas, takes a couple of days off, because these players come from all over Western Canada and some from Europe, they get an extended break, generally in the neighborhood of 8 to 10 days. So when Calgary checked out for Christmas way back in mid-December, they were to resume and get right after it. Well, shortly there, after COVID cases, as we know, started to intensify, and it wasn't until early January when Calgary had played three games out of their Christmas break with Medicine Hat when all of a sudden they too fell victim, much like every other team in the WHL, to these COVID cases. So as a result, the WHL put the league on pause. As cases intensified for teams, they went on pause, and Calgary was on pause with a number of teams around the Eastern Conference. So they were basically shut down from January 7th to 13th. As Calgary Hitman forward Sean Chagall joked on the weekend, it wasn't any fun being locked in the basement for essentially 5 days as they went through this. But they've come out the other side of it, and here we are now. It's going to be intense. You mentioned they've only played four games since January, but they're in the middle of four games in 5 nights, 6 games in 9 days, and they just had their pregame meal, and I was talking with assistant coach Trent Cassan, and he tells me in the month of March, it's basically a game every second day as the schedule sits right now. So they're going to get the busy road. It's to come, but for right now, they're in the middle of it, 4 games, 5 nights tonight against Connor Bedard and the Regina Pats.
We'll get to Connor Bedard and the Pats in just a little bit, but you know, you bring up a pretty good point in terms of the timing of that as well, and I wanted to dip into it. I know the team traded Jackson Vandalese. We'll get to him in a second as well, but the timing of the canceled games, the big gap and the big time off, it's not to say the Hitmen would have been massive buyers like we've seen in Edmonton or even in Winnipeg, but the timing of the break happening when it did for this team with the COVID protocol and everything that went into it, did that change their plans at the deadline, or were you always expecting it to be somewhat quiet?
Personally, I was always expecting it to be somewhat quiet when you look at where they sit in the overall scheme of things. You know, this is a team at the start of the year that had to basically re-identify itself. It was a very, very young team. There was 8 rookies in the lineup on opening night. So you knew that this was going to be a team in transition. And a question is, who was going to score was a big question at the start of the year. So to see where they are right now, which is comfortably in a playoff spot, they are in the number 7 spot. They do have a chance to move up, perhaps get as high as 4 or 5. But you look around the league, and the powerhouse teams of the conference right now are really almost untouchable. The Winnipeg Ice have only lost 5 games in regulation all season long in 35 games. The Edmonton Oil Kings have only lost 9 games in regulation in their 38 games. And the Red Deer Rebels have had an outstanding season as well, with only 11 losses in their 37 games in regulation. So the conference, the way it sat up this year, was almost as though you had to be real brave at the WHL trade deadline if you were not named Winnipeg, Edmonton, or Red Deer to go, you know what, I'm going to go buy because I really think we can beat one of those teams. Statistically, the odds weren't on your side. Junior hockey is so much built around, much like the National Hockey League, you have to deal with contracts. The WHL is built around your age block. And the Calgary Hitmen only have 2 19-year-olds on their roster. So they're a young group. You look up the highway in Edmonton, they've got 11. Red Deer's got 7, much older teams. So it's more of a youth movement for the Hitmen. But I really like the way they've played as of late. They've found their game after that bit of a rocky start. They've only got 3 regulation losses in their last 16 games. But I think the other part of this, Will, was the fact that COVID still exists. And we've seen the WHL go on pause and then come out of it. Nobody really knows what's going to happen in the next 2-3 months. We're all optimistic that the worst is behind us and we'll be, you know, pitter-patter, let's get at her, so to speak. No more need to reschedule games. But I'm from talking to some people around the league, there was some fear from some organizations going, gee, do we really want to give up first, second, third round picks and push all of our cards to the middle and then find that there's no league championship this year? Now, the WHL has said they are committed to 68 games. They are committed to the playoffs, and they are committed to the Memorial Cup. Last year, we didn't get any of that. So the commitment level is there. We're in a different society than we were a couple of years ago. The vaccine is here. We know a lot more about it. So there's a real belief that they will get to the finish line, but there are some teams going, still, you know, if you're in Manitoba, for example, they don't have fans in Brandon or in Winnipeg, as we know, with the Jets right now. So the Brandon Wheat Kings are allowed 250 people in their building. So do you want to stack your team up, go for a lengthy playoff run, and play in front of nobody? I mean, there's a chance that that could happen come the spring. So this is a very, very unique trade deadline. So to summarize, the teams that were at the top kind of tweaked and bought because they're already there, but nobody stuck their head out that was really not in the main pack and go, you know what, I think we can contend with this group. Everybody else just adjusted their roster. They got younger if they were outside the playoffs or just tweaked it a little bit.
And looking at what's happened, please, hockey world and society, let's not get robbed of an Oil Kings and Ice potential Eastern Conference championship because, as you know, those two teams were heavy in the buying category. And right now, the Hitmen could be on a collision course to face one of those two teams in the opening round, and that could be a lot of fun. We'll see what happens. Lots has to happen before we even get to that point. But the one trade or one significant move this franchise did make was trading away their 20-year-old captain. You've spent a lot of time around him. He played a lot of games for the Calgary Hitmen. Brad, if I were to ask you to sum up Jackson Vandalese's time in Calgary, what would you say?
Well, if you used one word, I'd say personality. He just oozed it on the ice and off the ice.
Guy's going to be a media star. You and I are going to lose our jobs, Brad.
And deservedly so. I mean, he's never met a microphone he doesn't like. He's so comfortable in pressure situations, not only off the ice in the media spotlight, but on the ice playing those big minutes against opposition lines. I talked to Trent Cassan, the assistant coach, about Jackson Vandalese, and he described him as this. He's kind of an old-school defenseman. Nowadays, a lot of defensemen are those quick, fleet-footed, puck-moving, maybe undersized defensemen that can quick up the puck to the forwards. Vandalese was more of a, hey, you come into my crease, I'm going to give you the cross-check in the small of the back. You get into the corner and you deliver a hit on a teammate I don't like, I'm prepared to drop the gloves. You know, he's really, really become I'm going to put it as this way. When Keegan Kanzig played on the Calgary Hitmen, I called him a cycle buster because the Medicine Hat Tigers were at their heyday at that time, and they'd come in and buzz around, and Kanzig would just pin guys to the corner. Your cycle stops dead. And for Jackson Vandalese, the same type of thing. When you're 6'7", well over 200 pounds, you can do things to players out there that take them out of a threat. And for Vandalese to go to Red Deer, you know, I only describe this year as a COVID year when you look at it. The Calgary Hitmen have traded with Red Deer. They have traded traded with Edmonton, and they have traded with Lethbridge. Rarely do you ever trade in your own division. But for Jackson VanDeLeest, he gets the opportunity in his final season in the WHL to perhaps chase a WHL championship trophy. And for the Calgary Hitmen, the return that they get, a second-round pick, and then an 18-year-old defenseman, Trey Patterson, who comes in. He's going to play in the top four tonight. He'll play with Graydon Seatman, so you're not getting a raw rookie. He's not Jackson VanDeLeest per se, but he's going to come in and eat a lot of those minutes. And then they get Blake Stevenson, a Calgary kid like Patterson, gets a chance to play in his hometown in the final season. Stevenson comes in. He's a rarity on this Hitman team. He's a right shot. He's among the top 10 in WHL in assists, and anyone who's followed this Hitman team this year knows one of their weaknesses has been the power play. In his first game on the Hitman, he gets 2 points on the power play, so all of a sudden your top six becomes more dangerous. Your defense isn't as big and rugged without VanDeLeest, but Patterson fills the minutes, and you get the second-round pick. To me, this is a trade on paper that works for both teams.
He is Brad Curl, radio voice of the Calgary Hitmen, who begin a three-game Saskatchewan road trip tonight in Regina. We've got that one for you on internet-only broadcast, 6 p.m., Pats and Hitmen. Logan?
Curly, first of all, good to talk to you, pal. Second of all, from your opinion, you've watched a lot of junior hockey. You've seen trade deadlines come and go. You've seen, you know, different years where there's been different situations of bringing guys in and letting guys go. This is a year you will have talked about you know, letting some of the more prominent guys on the team go. In junior hockey, is it possible for a team to really replace, even going back to a Luke Prokop, a Jackson VanDeLeest, an Adam Kidd, is it possible for teams in junior hockey to fill those roles, or is it sort of a development process for Steve Hamilton and the coaching staff to sort of adjust their lineups and see who can fill those roles?
Yeah, good to talk to you too, Logan, and that's a great question. There's no immediate fix. You know, you look at Jackson VanDeLeest, he was on the power play, he was on the penalty kill, he played against the opposition's number one line. There, you just don't have Jackson VanDeLeest 2.0 sitting behind him. It's a little bit from everybody, and what it does is it really pushes development. I look at Carter Yakimchuk as a prime example. He played his minor hockey in Calgary last year. At the start of the season, a lot of Hitman fans go, who is this kid? Well, the emergence of Carter Yakimchuk from the start of the year to being an outside defenseman, all of a sudden finding himself regularly in the tops or as a 5-6 pairing, really I think allowed you to make that trade for Jackson VanDeLeest, because you pick up some slack with Yakimchuk's emergence, and then you bring in Trey Patterson, and with Patterson, yeah, he's not as old as VanDeLeest. He's 18, has a little bit more to learn in some areas, but between Yakimchuk and Patterson, the two of them pick up and become a Jackson VanDeLeest, in the sense that those are the minutes that will be combined on. So I do think it's a little bit of, you know, opportunity as well, because we see it in the National Hockey League as well. Someone who doesn't play on the power play, go, well, can he score? All of a sudden you move out a power play guy in the offseason, a UFA steps aside, and you bring in somebody, and they're on the power play, and bam, their numbers take right off. Sometimes it's just about opportunity. They've always had it. It's just creating the door for them to come in and walk in. And with Adam Kidd going out as a 19-year-old to Kelowna, in comes Steele Quirring. Quirring is 18 years old. They believe that he can score. As a matter of fact, he's got 6 goals already this year, so they're hoping that his opportunity that he's going to get, maybe not top 6 minutes in Kelowna, comes into Calgary and plays in top 6 minutes. His numbers will get the bump, the ice time bump, if you want to call it, in junior hockey, which is so crucial. So development in this league is so fascinating to me. I've seen players go from 10 goals one year to 40 goals the next. We saw it from Riley Fiedler-Schultz a couple of years ago, only asked to be a checking member of the Calgary Hitmen, and all of a sudden, just 2 years later in his development, he's 11th in league scoring. You go from basically 4 goals 2 years ago to all of a sudden 17 this year. The development curve can be tremendous in junior hockey.
Two guys you mentioned there, Quirring and Yakimchuk, and that's sort of where I was going next, was give me the name of or names that you see, Brad, that step up and fill these opportunities that are on the Hitmen now. Is it, you know, a Sean Chagall? Is it a Fiedler-Schultz? Who is it that really comes in now for the Hitmen and takes on some of these more prominent roles after these trades have been completed?
Well, still, Quirin will come in and take on some of those minutes for sure. He'll play today on the second line. He'll make his Hitman debut. He was one of the players in COVID protocol, so he'll play with Cale Zimmerman and Zach Funk. You know, that's one thing that Calgary, I think, has lacked this year. They haven't had the second line. They had Fiddler Schultz up the middle with Sean Chagall, the Anaheim Ducks prospect, and Zach Funk on the right wing. And it was basically, as I look back in my scorebook, because I like to track this, I'm a bit of a nerd that way, they had 37 goals from their number one line, then it was a fall down to 13 from the second line. That was a couple of months ago. Today, as we sit and talk, 47 goals from their top line, 26 from their second line. So all of a sudden, you're getting some depth opportunity. So Steel Quirin, I think. David Adazinski, who we saw play for Canada at the U-17s, I think he has that opportunity. Maxim Muranov, who came over from Moscow, Russia, is a relative unknown. NHL Central Scouting comes out, puts him in their draft rankings. Muranov has certainly developed. Anton Astashevich is the other import that came over this year from Belarus. He has certainly found his production. And Oliver Tulk is a former first-round pick of this hockey club in the WHL Prospects Draft. And he found himself kind of finding his way into the league at the start of the year, and all of a sudden he's got six goals. So they do have a lot of by committee, so to speak. Steve Hamilton has said it from the start, the head coach, is this is a team that will have to do its work by committee. The one thing that they have on their side, and I love this team for it, it's compete. Night in and night out, you know they're going to show up. You know they're going to compete hard. And when you compete like that, you go to the right areas on the ice. It might not be pretty sometimes, but you are going to find some goals along the way. And this Calgary Hitmen team has pulled itself two games over 500 and into playoff conversation.
My last one for you, Curly, and it's going back a little bit of time since we talked to you, but since the World Juniors got canceled in Edmonton and Red Deer, I'm sure that's had a bit of a shockwave effect throughout the WHL and probably for, I don't want to, you know, limit out the Hitmen on there, but they didn't have as many representatives, you know, heading out as maybe some other teams did. But how have you felt it the last couple of weeks with that tournament being canceled and the usual massive effect that it has across, you know, the WHL and junior leagues as a whole this season?
Well, definitely disappointment from everybody I talk to because, you know, what are we first and foremost? If you're listening to this conversation, you're a hockey fan, right? And you'd like to see best on best, and we've been kind of robbed of that, and it looks like we won't get that at the Olympics either from the men's standpoint. There will be, you know, men's hockey at the Olympics, but it won't be the best NHLers on the ice. And I think the World Juniors, you know, it's one of those situations where you feel for the players and their development because that's where you become, you know, a household name, so to speak, and an opportunity to really show your NHL organization your opportunities that lie ahead. And, you know, a lot of these players become stars overnight. I remember Justin Pogge with the Calgary Hitmen back when, you know, he was a goaltender for Team Canada at the World Juniors, and he had come back to Calgary, and the media circus that just followed him and the fan circus. I was working for the Calgary Hitmen organization at the time in the communications department, and we went to Aaron Woods, you know, in southeast Calgary, and we pull up to this outdoor rink, and I would have swore to you that Tom Cruise or Tom Hanks or any big superstar you would think of just stepped out of the van because Pogge could barely get out of the vehicle. That's what kind of surrounded him. That's the headlines that he got, and deservedly so, for being Canada's World Junior goalie that year they hosted in Vancouver. Just the recognition you get. And for these players, you know, to miss that opportunity potentially, you certainly hope that they're going to find a way this coming summer to recreate that World Junior tournament. It is the highlight and will be the biggest stage that a lot of these players will play on. But you look at the Edmonton Oil Kings, they go at another World Junior, so to speak, yesterday at the trade deadline, acquiring Justin Sortif from the Edmonton Oil Kings. So if you want to watch the World Juniors per se and missed out on it, circle the calendar the next time the Edmonton Oil Kings come to town with Sebastian Cosa, Jake Neighbors, Dylan Gunther, Justin Sortif. That's a pretty prominent team right there. It could be Team Canada.
He is Brad Curl, radio voice of the Calgary Hitmen and Regina tonight in Saskatchewan to kick off a three-game road trip for the Calgary Hitmen. Just two more for you to wrap things up. First off, you mentioned his name a couple of times in passing, but just wanted to get in detail from you because, again, you've watched him over his time with the Hitmen, and this year really has exploded, and you expect that to happen when you're a 19-year-old playing in this league. But just offensively and really all around, Brad, what are you seeing and what's allowed Riley Fiddler-Schultz to play the way he has and kind of, you know, lead this team in a way that he hadn't previously in his career?
Well, his uncle is Vern Fiddler, who used to play in the National Hockey League, and Riley speaks very openly about being around that as a kid and how much it influenced him, and how much he was, you know, privileged to be able to witness things that went on behind the scenes. You know, sometimes we all have a passion in our lives, but maybe we don't have a mentor to get us there. You know, what an opportunity to have as a young player to have a mentor. You know, you want to be an NHL player. Your uncle is in the National Hockey League, so you get to go to the rink and get to see how these guys work out and practice. And Riley is very open to that, about how he's worked with his uncle Vern, you know, not only on just the details of the game, but also face-offs. You know, he's one of the best face-off men in the Western Hockey League. He's got 448 face-off wins already in 32 games. Gives you an idea of how prominent he is in the face-off circle. He's nearly 60%. He's been outstanding for Calgary in the draw. He's tied with Connor Bedard for shots on goal. So what does that mean? You've got the puck on your stick a lot. And for Riley Fiddler Schultz, the other part of him, he, along with Sean Chagall, I think is the perfect tandem to lead this group, because they love to work. Some players that put up the numbers, you kind of go to a game and you go, boy, this kid's kind of lazy. Or you watch an NHL game and you go, geez, this guy only plays one half of the ice. Well, Riley Fiddler Schultz is just as crucial in the defensive zone with a one-goal lead as he is in the offensive zone when your team's down a goal. He's just a 200-foot player, I think a coach's dream. He wears a letter, just really has embraced everything they've asked of him. Be a leader, done. Score some goals, done. Play in the defensive zone, done. Win some faceoffs, done. Be reliable every night, done. Lead the young guys, done. Just everything you want in a WHL player as a 19-year-old. He went to Buffalo Sabres camp as a free agent invite this year, talked openly about how much that helped him as well to kind of see, again, for his own eyes, the NHL game. He's just been so reliable. And to me, when you can be plus 20 on a team that's two games over 500 and 11th in the league in scoring, it goes to show how good a season you've had. And Riley Fiddler Schultz has been A-plus for the Calgary Hitmen.
30 seconds or less, Curly, but as you get set to call the game tonight, obviously the first name that jumps off the page to everybody is Connor Bedard, but what's the challenge for Calgary tonight in Regina?
You got to basically respect him, but not respect him too much. We've seen so many highlights this year from Bedard, who enters game tonight, by the way, on a six-game point scoring streak. He's got 45 shots in those six games, 16 points. We can talk to no end about the numbers. But the thing that jumps off the page for me by Bedard, you watch him and how many of his goals come one-on-two. And by that, I mean he's attacking, and all of a sudden the defense are going, whoa, here comes Bedard, I better back up. The next thing you know, you back up, you create separation, and what are you? You're a screen on your own goalie. He is just terrific. He's a game breaker. It's unfortunate that the Regina Pats don't have a lot else around him. This is a team that will miss the playoffs. It kind of reminds me of a few years ago when they had Jordan Eberle and they missed the playoffs, and Eberle, as we know, went on to be a pretty good player in the National Hockey League. Connor Bedard is the real deal. Calgary will have their hands full tonight.
Have a great call tomorrow. You'll be on the radio as it'll be game two of that three-game road trip, but Hitmen and Pats tonight with a 6 p.m. puck drop. Stay warm, stay indoors, and we'll talk to you again soon, Curly. Thanks, pal.
Certainly. Thanks, friends. See ya.
There he is. Brad Curl, radio voice of the Calgary Hitmen. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, which is going to continue to get a workout as the Montreal Canadiens have made a massive hire. They have got their guy. We'll explain their new GM hire and how they got to get on the name of Kent Hughes. When we come back, hour two of the big show continues live right here, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're listening to the big show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back. Hour two of the program continues live from the iconic Electric End Controls downtown studio. Reminder, it's a Calgary Flames game day. Just their 13th home game of the season. And they welcome in the red-hot Florida Panthers, who are 8-0-1 their last nine games. We've got that game for you, 7 o'clock puck drop, 6 p.m. pregame, right here on your home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960. Calgary in desperate need of a win. We'll see if they can snap their four-game losing skid tonight against the Florida Panthers. My name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon, and we will stay on the NHL and go back down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Welcome in front of the program from Sportsnet in Montreal. He is Eric Engels. And Eric, I know you've got a jam-packed day, so we appreciate the time. And I guess we'll just jump in. You've got the latest up at sportsnet.ca. You went into detail about how the Habs landed on Kent Hughes. as their new GM, and it sounds like it was a bit of a kind of a waiting game. It was always Kent Hughes' job. It was just a matter of trying to convince him to leave his agency to come to Montreal. So I guess your thoughts on how they landed on Kent Hughes as the team's new GM. Apparently we lost him. So we'll see if we can call Eric back, and we'll see if we can connect with Eric Engels on Sportsnet in Montreal. Habs hiring Kent Hughes today as their 18th GM in franchise history. You mentioned it earlier, Logan. What's that, Aaron? Oh, we got him back. Eric Engels has rejoined the program. We lost him there. Eric, I was just saying, I know you got a busy day, so we'll just kind of jump right in. Appreciate the time, as always. Your latest up at sportsnet.ca on how the Habs landed on Kent Hughes as their 18th GM in franchise history. And a bit of convincing, but they do it, as it didn't seem like it was an easy decision for him to leave his agency.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever an easy decision to not only leave your agency, but leave the work that you've dedicated your life to doing, right? So it's clear that he was number one target for Jeff Gorton. It's clear that Jeff Gorton had the authority to make that decision, and naturally he would as executive vice president. But with the other people that were involved in the process, from Canadiens owner Jeff Molson to Bob Gainey, former GM and Hall of Famer, and Michael Anlauer, minority owner, you know, this really came down to what Jeff Gorton felt would be the best fit with him in this tandem operation the Canadiens have created. So they get Kent Hughes, and I spoke to a couple of people at least who think he's going to do a fantastic job.
Yeah, and I mean, you've made mention it in your piece too, and I know that obviously part of that was convincing him to come over from his agency, but a five-year commitment is a pretty big one, Eric.
Yes, it is, and it's congruent with what Jeff Gorton will be assigned with doing over the next 5 years too. And so, you know, they're in this together. They've got a huge task in front of them. And yes, you know, there was probably some financial implications in Hughes leaving Cortex, his agency, and managing upwards of close to $300 million in contracts for his clients over the last few years. And it's a big decision that he wasn't, you know, rushing to jump into, but clearly he liked what the Canadiens were selling to him, and they obviously like what he's bringing to the table.
I understand tomorrow we'll hear from Jeff Molson, Jeff Gorton, and Kent Hughes. I'm just curious your thoughts, and I know this was kind of the overwhelming thought when Jeff Gorton was hired by the Montreal Canadiens earlier this year, but you know, ultimately, Eric, how do you, I guess, see the pie chart breaking down when it comes to, you know, the final say in hockey decisions? And do you expect to find that answer out tomorrow?
Well, I think Kent Hughes is the GM. He is going to operate like every GM does in every market. And obviously with Jeff Gorton, you know, having final authority on whether or not decisions that get made get carried through, you know, I think that's a normal kind of construct that we're seeing around hockey in a lot of different markets. And I just think, you know, Jeff Gorton narrowed in his search on Kent Hughes specifically because A, he knows him really well and has a long-standing relationship, and B, he trusts him. And these are two people based on their profiles that are analytical, that think about things thoroughly, that listen to the people around them. And so I do expect that they're going to be making decisions in concert. And, you know, I think there's value in that. You know, obviously both guys have to have the authority to, when they make a decision, have it carried through. But at the same time, they're used to working with each other, balancing their ideas off of each other. And that's going to help as they've got a big mandate to fulfill here.
Of course, Ken Hughes' client list is lengthy, as is the amount of money he's got tied up in that client list. And, you know, I think in a salary cap era, it's so key. I mean, how much do you see contract negotiations and being able to manage the cap and all that goes into that? That's obviously a big advantage for Kent for, you know, I guess being on that one side and now doing it from the other side. I would expect that many in Montreal expecting that to be a huge strength for him going forward.
Well, that's the house, right? And it's in Gorton's too. Now the question is, what about the other parts of the job, right? Because being a GM, is not just about making trades and signings and managing the cap. It has a lot to do with managing the team on a day-to-day basis, having the pulse of the room, understanding who the players are and what their families are dealing with, and on any given day why a player might be struggling or why you might be outcast by the group or by, you know, or is there an issue with the group and less so that player that gets outcast, or, you know, these are all the things that you have to know inside out. The things that I think were really strengths of Mark Bergevin, in addition to being quite good on the signing and trade front, you know, this is a big part of the job, and the part that Kent Hughes doesn't have experience from this side of the table. Jeff Gordon definitely does, but it's Kent Hughes that's going to be doing much more of that work, I believe. And I think, you know, in speaking to Darren Ferris, who he worked alongside in managing Cortex, Phil LeCavalier, who he hired years ago as part of the M5 group that merged with Cortex and is an agent, and his brother is Vincent LeCavalier, who was a client of Kent Hughes. You know, what they were saying is, here's a guy that really understands his players and understands the dynamics. So even if he doesn't have specific experience that lends to what I was just talking about, he does from the other side of the table as an agent. So it's going to be really interesting to see how he navigates that part of the job.
He is Eric Engel, Sportsnet in Montreal, kind enough to give us some time on the big show today. The Montreal Canadiens hiring Kent Hughes as their 18th GM in franchise history. Logan?
Eric, is there an added pressure to this for Kent, being a guy who grew up just 30 kilometers away from Montreal and now heading back to his hometown to take over the team that looks like it's going to need a lot of work over the next couple of years?
Yeah, there is. I mean, naturally, you're a homegrown kind of talent. You wanna do well for the organization you grew up, you know, watching and following. But I think it pales in comparison to the pressure that'll be on him to turn around the situation the Canadiens currently find themselves in, as the last place team in the National Hockey League, spending the most amount of money on its roster and with a lot of players signed long term. So, you know, the mandate is enormous. And his ability to handle it, you know, is going to be under very highly pressurized circumstances. And I'm sure that was part of the decision and how hard of a decision it probably was for him to take the job.
In your mind, or maybe I'm not sure if you have this answer yet or not, but what would have separated Hughes from guys like you mentioned in your article, say a Daniel Briere or a Matthew Darche?
I think it's his experience, obviously, in negotiating contracts and dealing with all the GMs around the league and those relationships being quite firm. You know, okay. Matthew Darche, obviously, in his role with the Tampa Bay Lightning, would have been a bit more exposed than Daniel Briere. Both those guys were fantastic candidates who really impressed the Canadians within the interview process. But both obviously making their way through hockey operations and learning to become, you know, the experienced general manager candidates that can inevitably do that job and do it quite successfully. I believe they're both excellent, and I believe they're both going to have opportunities, not only with their current organizations, but other organizations who took note of how this process unfolded with the Canadians and the buzz that was out there around both names. So I think Hughes has distinguished himself just in terms of his relationships and his experience. And it's clear his relationship with Jeff Gordon was the linchpin in this decision getting made the way it did.
What about the staff around Hughes, Eric? Are we going to see some ads in the next couple of weeks or months about maybe adding more to the hockey ops department in Montreal underneath Hughes and now Gordon?
No question. It's going to expand significantly, and with an emphasis on player development and diversifying the front office. And so I think, you know, Hughes will certainly have the opportunity to bring in people that he trusts and wants to listen to and has relationships with. But also, I think Gordon and Jeff Molson and the other people involved in the Canadiens are going to, you know, possibly want to place a couple of people themselves, people that they may have interviewed in this extensive process that they just went through, that they feel can help in those initiatives that I was talking about, from diversifying the front office to the analytics department to player development, and also, you know, in just having as many qualified people around the table as possible, so you get that balance of opinion. And I think they realize how important that is, and I expect it's going to be a top priority on top of the obvious one in front of them, which is what to do with the roster moving forward.
You tweeted it out a little bit earlier, and you've mentioned it in your article at sportsnet.ca, but Patrick Waugh congratulating Kent Hughes for his success and his job being offered to him today. And I think Montreal fans were always curious where Patrick would have stood in this whole process. Can you sort of break down for us where he stood in all of this? Was he ever a serious candidate? Was he close to this? How involved would you say Patrick Waugh was in consideration for this job, Eric?
Well, we know he was interviewed, and we know he was considered. He didn't end up being one of the two, one of the finalists, as we know, were Daniel Briere, Matthew Darche, and Kent Hughes. You know, whether or not this role was perfectly suited to him is debatable. You know, I think it's clear the Canadians felt there were other people that they were more interested in going towards for the specific role. I wouldn't dispel the notion that Patrick could be up for another role down the line with the organization. You know, I think he's an excellent coach, and there could be an opportunity there down the line with respect to Dominic Ducharme, who's still in place and has 2 years under contract beyond this one. I also think that Patrick Waugh wasn't sitting on his hand saying, if I don't get this job with the Canadians, that's it for me. That's the only thing I was interested in. I think he's keenly interested in returning to the NHL in any capacity that suits his kind of skill set. And I think there are other teams out there that should be considering him for whether it's a GM job or a coaching job or a player personnel job or whatever it is. You know, this guy, whenever you say his name, it's associated with winning. You know, no matter what else comes with that, whether people feel he's volatile or emotional or overly passionate, you know, it seems to have worked out quite well for him throughout his career in any capacity. So I would not dispel the notion that Patrick Waugh will return to the NHL at some point and could potentially land with the Canadiens in another role.
Just to follow up on that, you mentioned Waugh's personality and sometimes his honesty and the way he goes about doing his business that maybe, you know, fairly or unfairly probably rubs some people the wrong way. Do you think that that has held him back in any way, shape, or form when it comes to getting a position with an NHL team, even outside of Montreal, maybe?
I think it probably has, but I don't know that it absolutely should. You know, at the end of the day, when you make these decisions, you have to go with what you feel is the best fit with your organization and best fit in terms of your philosophy and what you really covet in terms of attributes. You know, all the things that are considered negative around Patrick Waugh, his passion, his volatility, you know, in terms of being somewhat unpredictable in terms of what he'll say, you know, could also be seen as positives. They could also be seen as the reason why he is so successful and has been throughout his entire career. And I don't think Patrick should be taking this experience or any other before it and saying, I need to change who I am in order to be successful, because he clearly has been very successful throughout his career. And there might be a team out there that's looking for the exact profile that he offers, which is quite a unique one. And he's, you know, he obviously had an exceptional Hall of Fame worthy career. But, you know, on top of that, he's an elite talent evaluator. He really knows players inside out. And he's connected to the younger generation of players who always work with the Quebec Remparts. So I don't see how anybody could look at Patrick Waugh and say, no, I'm completely uninterested, without at least going through the process of speaking to him and understanding what he's all about. Because what he's been all about throughout his entire career, as I mentioned before, is winning.
Final few with Eric Engels, Sportsnet Montreal. The Habs hiring Kent Hughes today as their GM. It's also a game day for the Montreal Canadiens. And now to what's happening currently with this team. The news yesterday, and man, you just got a feel for him. But it sounds like starting from scratch for Carey Price when it comes to recovery from knee surgery. What do you know about that? And if you were to handicap it, I think a lot of people are saying now, Eric, that, you know, it's probably going to be a long shot if he plays at all this season.
Look, I am of the belief that he intends to play again this season. I think he'd like to do it as soon as possible. Until I hear otherwise, that's what I'm going to believe. And it's just harder for me to be on that wavelength, knowing that, you know, he's unfortunately needs to kind of get back in the gym and go through the elaborate steps of getting on the ice with his goaltending coach and then inevitably with the team for practice and back to a game. So long as he remains in limbo and not on the ice with his teammates, you know, I can understand that people are going to naturally speculate whether or not he's played, yeah, whether or not he's played his last game with the Canadiens and whether or not he'll even appear in one this season. I totally get it. I just haven't been told that that's the case. And what I have been told is that, you know, they expect that he's going to play at some point this season. So I hope for Carey, considering everything that he's been through, if that's his desire, that it happens. Because I think every professional athlete that has, you know, the pride like he does wants to get back and test their limitations, especially coming off of off-season knee surgery and everything else that he's been through. So I hope to see him again soon, and I think everybody in Montreal would like to see him again soon. And if that's Carey's intention, I definitely hope it happens for him because he's been through quite a bit.
Of course, with the new front office changes and everything that's gone on there, I think we've seen it no matter where it is, whether it's Montreal or anywhere across the National Hockey League. When you got a new front office in there, it likely means the end of the road for the head coach. Obviously, the results on the ice have not been great this season. Is your read that we're seeing the end of is this going to be a one and done for Dominic Ducharme as this team's head coach?
I really can't answer, and I don't think it's fair to Ducharme to just assume that'll be the case just because new people are in and the results have been what they are. Fair. I do think that he has had a terrible hand dealt to him basically from the day that he took over as coach. I think he's a very smart hockey mind, and he's just been in an extremely compromised and difficult position since day one, from the COVID outbreak with the Canadiens last year to the schedule being rendered to impossible for him to run a practice up until last year's playoffs to, you know, being shut down himself with COVID going to his first Stanley Cup final, to all the off-season losses of Price and Weber and go down the list. It's so extensive. I don't want to name every single player. But look, you know, the reality is the odds are stacked against him right now. He's got a 2-year mandate beyond this one under contract. And I think Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon, I'm sure Jeff Gordon has spent some time getting to know him, but Kent Hughes needs to get to know him a lot better and get a pulse for how the players feel about it and how he feels about it and make a decision from there. So I think it's too early for anybody to be suggesting that, oh, this is it for him. We know that he's coaching from here to the end of the year. Jeff Gordon confirmed as much when he was introduced to the Canadiens media, and we'll see where it goes after that.
Finally, you mentioned all the health issues and how really depleted this lineup has been all year long. Eric, it sounds like we're on the verge of getting some reinforcements, beginning with Tyler Toffoli. Paul Byron is close as well. And not too far behind there is Brendan Gallagher. Any idea on when we might see those players and as early as tonight for Toffoli, or is that still too early in your eyes?
I think it could be as early as tonight regarding Toffoli. Quite a remarkable turnaround since he was supposed to be out for 8 weeks post-hand surgery, but he seems to be feeling well and took part in practice today. And the coach is speaking in about a half an hour's time, so we'll get more information by then. Gallagher is a week or two away, but is skating in Montreal. Paul Byron, you know, is joining the team and should be back at some point this week, which is, you know, great. You know, this guy coming off hip surgery in the offseason is a key leader for the team, and he hasn't been around for the entire season. And right as he was on the verge of getting back, you know, somebody in his entourage got COVID and then he got it. So it's been an extensive wait for him, especially as he was right on the verge of returning. So that's big for him. Josh Anderson is back already. Joel Edmondson, unfortunately, you know, his situation's a little murkier. It's going to take time. There's no timetable for his return. But, you know, as you say, reinforcements are returning. Joel Armia and Cole Caulfield were placed in COVID protocol. So, and it's really crazy in Armia's position because you know, he was the positive test that sent the Canadians into shutdown last year before their schedule became the final 25 games in 44 nights. And then he had a false positive that kept him out of game one of the Stanley Cup final. So it's, and he's in the midst of a, you know, basically the worst season of his career after signing a contract extension. So it's really crazy, and who knows what happens next in terms of COVID, because they were shut down for 5 days after virtually everybody on their team had it, but the couple guys still remaining, you know, guys like Nick Suzuki comes to mind immediately, hasn't had it and hasn't been shut down, and now all of a sudden there's a couple other players in protocol. So it's something to watch from here to the end, unfortunately. When are we ever going to get out of this thing? I hope soon for all of us.
Well, and I was just going to say, and on top of all that, I mean, you know, the NHL is the one sport that deals with the most cross-border travel, and they've announced that they're going to change their testing policy post-All-Star, and it just feels like it's getting even more murky. So, I'm with you. Let's hope that this is the only season we've got to deal with this in terms of all 82 games, and maybe, just maybe, come next October, we're kind of back to normal. Eric, I know it's been a busy day. We appreciate the time. We'll let you go and enjoy the game tonight. Thank you, man.
We're only halfway through.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Take care, man. Thank you.
Busy night ahead. Take care, guys.
Yeah, you bet. There he is, Eric Engels, who will be on with Tim and Friends at 4 o'clock, then on Hockey Central at 4:30. And yes, the Montreal Canadiens are in Dallas to face the Stars tonight. That is a 6:30 Calgary face-off from Dallas, and as you heard in that conversation, no Joel Armia and no Cole Caulfield in that game. Both players today placed in COVID-19 protocol. It's, Logan, been quite a year in Montreal.
It sure has been, Will, and as Eric made mention of there, it feels like it's just beginning, because despite everything that's happened, the biggest decisions and the most impactful ones are still the ones that are going to come at trade deadline and the draft and going forward, and, you know, seeing where this team lands for the draft lottery and all of that. As crazy a year as it's been since they went to the Stanley Cup final against Tampa Bay, it's only going to get crazier from here as they try to get themselves out of this hole now.
And we'll see if they can take a step in the right direction. They were on the losing end of the, as Eric called it, the toilet bowl yesterday between the Coyotes and the Habs. And we'll see what tonight brings against the Dallas Stars. Again, 6:30 face-off for the Stars and the Montreal Canadiens. Eric joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. We'll take a break when we come back. Time for headlines for Hyatt Infinity as we go into hour 3 of the big show on a Flames game day. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.